You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
They're back together again. Eric and Jeff are reunited as friends. Oh, Movie BS is back together again. Do you remember the day when Jeff moved away? Well, he changed his mind and turned around. Now he's back to stay. Oh, Movie BS is back together again.
What's that? Hello! Welcome to Movie BS with Baron Snyder, your movie podcast. I'm your host, Eric D. Snyder, and that over there, why, that's my co-host, Jeff Baer.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jeff Baer. That's my co-host, Eric D. Snyder. And here we are once again. Oh, do you feel that excitement in the air, Eric?
I do.
Do you feel it?
I do feel it.
Special time.
Mm-hmm. How did you know?
We're synced.
The summer box office challenge coming up almost summertime. Yeah.
The summer. It's honestly too soon.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it feels to me. This has nothing to do with the actual movies coming out. For me, it is now too soon because I got to say, I thought this was the most important thing in my life. I thought it was my top priority.
Movies?
The summer box office challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Beating you. Making sure that my knowledge would be superior to your knowledge upon entering the
guessing
draft.
Would be superior to my guessing, right?
Analysis, however you want to determine victory,
guessing
in hand, all of that kind of stuff. Apparently, I'm now under the impression that my parents, who are in town visiting, and my two kids have taken priority over the hours upon hours of thinking that I normally do for this thing. I am disappointed in myself. And I am already stating all of this because I think I'm going to lose this year.
So what you're saying, if I understand you correctly, is that you, because of prior obligations, are going to be putting forth even less effort than usual.
Okay, now wait a minute. While I, let's just say, don't give 110% every time, because
you give 100 or 10%.
There you go. I was going to say 110 is not possible. Why would you even try? But no, I normally put in, I think I normally put in more work in this
for the box office challenge specifically.
If you could just make everything a competition in this podcast, then you would always get effort from me, but you haven't done that, have you, Eric?
I guess that's true. I guess that's true.
There, the finger can point elsewhere.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that in a little bit, the Summer Box Office Challenge draft. I'm ready to go. I am raring to go. But we'll get to that later. First, we got to review some movies.
We have to. It's the rules.
Well, it's what the people are paying us for.
Oh.
First up, Keanu.
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 It's about a kitty cat named Keanu.
Meow.
Which is a funny name for a kitty cat, because that's also the name of that actor, Keanu Reeves.
I hear you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is Key and Peele from that TV show, Key and Peele.
Yes. And I saw this film at South by Southwest.
That's right. You did.
And you now have gone to the advanced screening in Portland. And we are both ready to have vastly different views on this movie. I'm looking forward to you changing my mind.
Oh, really?
On what I had totally decided about this film.
Interesting.
And that is hopefully what you're bringing. Because here's the thing. Key and Peele are very good at creating comedy.
They are. They've got that funny show, Key and Peele.
They have proven themselves. Not only do they know funny, they know intelligent humor and envelope pushing humor as well.
Mm-hmm. I've seen them push envelopes. I've seen them push envelopes. I've seen them bend envelopes. I saw them punch an envelope in the neck once.
And here's the thing. This movie about a kitty cat is rated R.
It sure
so
is.
There's some edge. So count me in. I'm excited. How did you feel about the movie?
Well, it's an action comedy. And it is unfortunately, eventually, that's an action comedy. Yep. Let's get a bunch of people shooting at each other. The premise is, I don't know the characters' names. Yeah, I do. Terrell, Jordan, Peele. Peele is sad because his girlfriend dumped him. And Key, his married friend, hanging out with him.
Clarence,
yeah. Terrell found a kitty cat that we saw had escaped from a drug den or something. Wandered off and wound up at Peele's house. And then the cat gets kidnapped by drug dealers.
Right.
That's all too much explanation. Key and Peele want to find the drug dealers that stole Peele's kitty cat and get it back.
And you know what? They're not. They're not street tough.
No, they're not.
They're not gang members.
There's a lot of jokes, which there, I guess that's also a thing they come back to on their show a lot, about them being not stereotypical black men and what that means being stereotypical. And sometimes they'll break into that because it turns out that they now have to pretend to be hardcore gangsters in order to get in the good graces of the actual gangster who has their cat.
Yeah, they got to deal with people like Cheddar, High C.
Played by Method Man.
Yep.
And
it's one of those things where at first you don't know if the whole movie is just, or are we making fun of people that worship their pets? You don't know if that's the first thing.
And it seems like maybe it's going to be a kind of a parody of John Wick, naming the cat Keanu, obviously, and then kind of the parallel situation. But then it's not. It's not that.
And then you're finally – there's a strip club that they eventually get to, and that's when their gangster version of themselves comes out. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, is this what it's going to be about? Is this like two – straight-laced guys fitting in a world that they're uncomfortable
pretending with. Pretending to be tough guys, yeah.
That's it.
Is that for a while?
And then the problem with it is they keep progressing, but then regressing. And like, so it feels like it's a series of sketches where it's like, look what this normal guy is encountering. How would a normal guy react to that?
Right.
But the problem is they'll see something crazy or they'll be involved with something so over the top that then it seems like, well, you can't go back to being your normal self. Like, you've changed as a human being because you've gone through this. So now you're going to react differently to the next situation, right? And it's like, you're not. You almost forgot this first insane thing happened.
You're going
to
keep doing that.
You're just doing that again? And it's – there's it was, a. I wanted to stop and kind of be like, Key, Peele, now – you did this. You did this five times now. You're not going to do this four more times, right? You're going to give me something different.
No, because, see, then – well, they didn't have any different ideas, so you got to just keep repeating the ones. Mm-hmm. It really felt like a Saturday Night Live sketch that's really funny, but then it keeps going on too long, and you're like, okay, that was funny, but let's wrap this up here. And it keeps going. And I laughed at some of it, a lot of it here and there. But then the returns diminish as it goes on. There's random sort of – one of them, Clarence, takes some drug that puts him on a drug trip, and he imagined as George Michael's Faith video. And that's kind of amusing, but there's no payoff to it except that he's a big George Michael fan. But there's that scene there, that fantasy, that dream is not for anything.
Well, and not only that, the payoff of being a big George Michael fan – it feels like there's one moment, but it's in the car with some gangsters and it's,
who have never heard of George Michael, by the way.
They've never heard of George Michael, but then it's also that thing where it's you're so belittling the gangster's intelligence in like how you're selling them this idea of George Michael or whatever, that it feels, it feels beneath Key and Peele to be like hammering out a joke. This to me felt like one of the scripts that Kevin Hart just said, yes, I'll do it. Sure. Sign me up because I want to get bigger and better. And there will be a good paycheck here and I'll bring in some audience and this will be fun. It didn't feel like the consideration that I've seen from Key and Peele and other aspects. And that's the weird part because it's
– And Kevin Hart's not even in it, even though Kevin Hart's like not even in Hart movie.
Yeah. It's an utterly average journey. And then the little – not even cameos, but side characters don't bring enough life to where normally you would think they would. Will Forte shows up.
And he's funny for the like two scenes that he's in.
Anna Faris shows up, and that one is just. Did you like that whole scene? How it played out? So it's unfortunate.
What do you get?
It's a 5 out of 10. But the whole thing, isn't that how you felt when while you were watching it? It was just like, well, this is unfortunate.
I mean, that's not unfortunate. It's disappointing. It's not as funny as it ought to be. But I laughed enough to lukewarmly recommend it. I give it a B minus.
No. Yeah.
And then a good movie is called Sing Street. And we saw that at South by Southwest and reviewed it briefly on that show. So here's that review right now. Yes. Sing Street is Irish. It's just a delightful Irish comedy. It's a musical. It's by the guy who made Once, which was not especially a comedy. And then he made that terrible movie Begin Again.
It wasn't terrible. It had some moments.
It was just an unbearable, just excruciating pile of garbage. And then now he's made a good movie again called Sing Street, set in Dublin in 1985. 15-year-old kid named, what's his name? Connor.
Yeah.
Most Irish kids are named Connor. And he starts a band because he wants to impress a girl. And there you go.
It is simple and sweet.
Goes to a Catholic school, gets some of his mates together to make a band. And they're teenagers, but they are young teenagers. So they're not like the kind of teenagers like that are doing well with the ladies. Like they're awkward and young and
one of them randomly chooses to dress up as a cowboy in a music video, and it just kills me.
So he,
he's so tiny and cute already.
Connor's older brother Brendan is introducing him to music. This 85, so they're like he's introducing him to Duran Duran and The Cure and Spandau Ballet, and it's funny to watch Connor adopt these new styles and everything as they're coming with music. And the film has some
at his Catholic school,
right?
As well, like the look and everything. Yeah.
There's a few original songs in the film that feel like authentic mid-80s pop songs. Really good job with that. Really catchy songs. The soundtrack could do great if they promote it. We will at some point have to address the fact that the main kid is played by an actor named Ferdia Walsh Pilo. Ferdia Walsh hyphen Pilo.
This is his first acting gig, it looks like. The best part of him is he's the only one that doesn't necessarily belong in the band right away. Everybody else has like musical talent that he's found. We don't get that usual, we've all got to learn instruments because we're all trying to impress girls and we're all going to struggle with that. We have some real talent here.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, you see him kind of struggle as a lead singer. And it feels 100% authentic to watch him struggle and then end up with a pretty good voice at the end. Mm-hmm. And I loved that evolution because it's a tough thing to nail. And even this coming of age movie or trying to impress the girl or having like awkward mates and a bully at school and all these things are normal devices that we're used to. And it just keeps feeling like Sing Street gets it right.
Yeah.
They just keep doing such a good job with it that you can't help continuously cheer for these kids and their evolution. I loved it.
Really happy, upbeat movie. It's a big crowd pleaser.
Mm-hmm. And a great, great focus on the brother relationship.
Yeah, I like what they did with him, that he's not – they kind of gave a little bit about his history and his ambitions. This was the last movie I saw at South by Southwest, and it was a fitting ending because it's a kind of a perfect example of South by Southwest. It's funny. It's a crowd pleaser, and it premiered at Sundance.
Shots fired.
Just saying. And we apparently didn't give it grades. I think we were so excited about it that we forgot to give it scores. So I give it an A minus.
I give it a 9.
BS approved.
BS approved.
Great. Sing Street. Sing Street. And then Mother's Day. You didn't see this movie.
Tell me all about Mother's Day.
Mother's Day.
I have so many questions.
Well, I'm not going to have very many answers. I'm sorry.
Aww.
Mother's Day is directed by Gary Marshall, who died 15 years ago, but his body has continued to excrete movies as an autonomic response.
His funny bone died.
No, he actually died. He actually died. It's like when you know how you can cut the head off a chicken, but it'll keep crapping for a while after that. It's like that, Gary Marshall. And Mother's Day is the follow-up to, of course, Valentine's Day and New Year's Eve, his other large ensemble holiday-themed romantic comedies.
For some reason, I was thinking there was one more, but there's not.
No, those are his two.
Okay. Right.
Well, there's Friday the 13th, but that was not a romantic comedy.
It's different.
Another holiday-themed thing, yeah. And this time, this is a movie full of declarative sentences, by which I mean characters say things like, I'm going to give you some specific actual examples of things that characters say. I have abandonment issues.
Oh, goodness.
Because, you see, there's 50 characters in this movie.
Yes, yeah, so
you not
just say
not enough time to, like, show them developing who they are. They have to actually say out loud what their deal is. Or another character says, I'm your sister and I live next door. Also an actual line.
What?
Yeah. Things like that. And here's why I think this matters. This is interesting to me. About two-thirds of the way through the movie, at the preview screening the other night, packed with moms, I assume moms, ladies anyway, women who seemed like they could be moms. A lot of moms came out to see this movie. And about two-thirds of the way through, the Jennifer Aniston character has gotten a new car. And we see it's a shiny new Escalade, and she has personalized plates. And her ex-husband, Timothy Oliphant, notices the car. And we see his face register that, oh, he notices this car. And I hear two or three ladies, various parts around me in the theater saying, she got a new car. Because, see, there the movie had momentarily forgotten to say explicitly out loud what is going on.
Oh, dumb people are going to be so happy by this movie.
And these people filled in the gap there where Gary Marshall sort of dropped the ball briefly. So if you like simple declarative sentences and you like to have everything pointed out to you, this is the movie for you.
Also, does John Lovitz just nail his part?
He's got a couple lines as a comedy.
I'm looking at this cast list.
Here's what we have. We got Jennifer Aniston. She is divorced from Timothy Oliphant. She got two boys, and Timothy Oliphant gets remarried to this super young chick, young hot chick. And Jennifer Aniston, Sandy, she's upset because it's a big surprise marriage and whatever. I'm sympathetic to Sandy.
Okay.
Then who else we got?
Jennifer Garner.
Jennifer Garner, she's dead. Is in – yeah.
What do you mean?
No, she's dead in the movie. She is the dead – we see her in a video clip, the dead Marine wife of Jason Sudeikis.
Oh, boy.
Who's got two daughters.
Oh, Jason Sudeikis. That's going to be tough to get over.
And it's
– does he find love?
You know, he – it seems like they're setting him up to meet Jennifer – well, he does meet Jennifer Aniston's character. But actually, by the end of the movie, they're only sort of beginning to, oh, hey, maybe we'll go out.
Oh.
So it's – not quite, but it does set them up. He's got two daughters, one of whom just started her period. Gotta send old dad to the store to buy tampons. That's where they meet. That's where he meets Jennifer Aniston.
And he's holding tampons.
It's at the checkout. And I need a price check for the embarrassing tampons. One of those situations.
Oh, boy. Kate Hudson, how's she doing?
Kate Hudson, she was confusing at first because there's a scene where we meet her and what's her name from Scrubs? Sarah Chalk. And Cameron Esposito, playing a woman named Mac. We meet the three of them together, and it's Kate Hudson and Sarah Chalk are sisters. Sarah Chalk is lesbian, and Cameron Esposito is her partner.
Okay.
At first, all I could tell, because they're working on a gay pride parade float, a big made out of – in the shape of a giant womb.
All right.
And so I could tell that at least one of the three was gay, but I wasn't sure who it was at first. It was these three women. Somehow they're sisters and lovers, and I don't know how – that's how it shakes out. But then here's their big situation. Kate Hudson is married to an Indian-American guy played by Asif Manvi.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like there's only two or three that get regularly work as that.
She's secretly married to him because it turns out her and Sarah Chalk, sisters they are, their parents – are rednecks. Margot Martindale and Robert Pine are like full-on like American flag t-shirt wearing.
Oh,
you married a foreigner? Homophobic, racist things. And so Kate Hudson has hidden the fact that she married this Indian guy and has a child with him. because she hasn't talked to her parents in several years.
Nice.
Her lesbian sister also hiding her lesbianness. She has told her parents that she's engaged or married even to some guy.
Fantastic.
They talk to their parents on Skype, and it's hilarious because the parents are in a Winnebago, and they – I have never seen a more obvious use of green screen. Or not never. I shouldn't say in 50 years I haven't seen. Because it's clearly – it's a cheap set of a Winnebago on a set, and they got some fake background going past. Not even trying. Like I said, Gary Marshall died 15 years ago. So what's coming out of him is just really the basic, the bare minimum. But eventually the parents show up at the sister's place, and of course they meet the Indian husband and the lesbian partner. And they freak out. But here's how they come around, because racist homophobic mom, Margo Martindale, answers a Skype call from the Indian son-in-law's mother.
Okay.
She is trying to Skype to her son, but instead Margo Martindale walks past and the laptop's open, so she answers.
Right. Why wouldn't you?
Right, sure. This woman, who we've already established, can barely use Skype. Mm-hmm. So she answers the call, and it's like, oh, you must be my daughter's husband's mother. And the other one's like, you must be my son-in-law's mother or daughter-in-law's mother. And they bond over Skype, and they get over it. Or she gets over it. The racist one gets over it. They try to make it balanced by the Indian one being like, I was skeptical when my son married a white girl. But you're not really racist. Quit trying to do that.
All right. You're not the racist one. Julia Roberts.
She is a she's on the Home Shopping Network. Big star she is. Big star. Miranda selling her jewelry on Home Shopping Network. And we mostly only see her separate from everything else. We don't know how she's connected. But I will tell you, there's also Zach and Kristen, a young couple with a cute young baby. Zach is British, and he is a stand-up comedian. And
does he say anything funny?
His jokes are okay.
All right.
And his wife, they both work at a bar, he and his wife. Wife is Britt Robertson, who's been in a few things. She was in Tomorrowland. Not from Game of Thrones, I looked. Kristen, she's the one with abandonment issues. And she, Zach has been wanting to marry her for years, and they have a child together, for heaven's sake. But she keeps dragging her feet because she has abandonment issues. Why does she have abandonment issues? Because she was given up for adoption as a baby, and she's never met her real mother.
I have a hunch. I have a hunch.
What's your hunch?
Is it Hector Alessandro? Is that the mom?
Oh,
he's in all
so
of these,
close.
Right? Hector
so close.
Alessandro?
He is in this. Okay. He's an executive at the Home Shopping Network. But no, it is the Julia Roberts character who is her long-lost birth mother. Then also the Jennifer Aniston character somehow gets to present – I think she's a designer or something. She gets to present something to Julia Roberts. But Julia Roberts is doing like a signing for some contest winners. And they think that Jennifer Aniston is one of those. And she winds up kind of having a freak out. Twice in this movie, Jennifer Aniston's character, Sandy, has a public freak out. One time she's singing in her car, berating herself for having done a bad job flirting with Jason Sudeikis in the store.
Oh.
And then he walks past and sees her ranting to herself.
Classic.
And then
classic
here when she's trying to meet Julia Roberts, she has a freak out. And then it winds up being the thing that sells Julia Roberts on her. One of those, I admire your gumption, how you just right. screamed all your feelings out at strangers there just now. One of those situations.
I got one last question.
All right,
you can give me whatever you want.
Yeah.
How is Penny Marshall as the opening narrator for this film?
Only appears in the very beginning, just to give... and I didn't recognize – I should have recognized your voice given that it's Gary Marshall. But she basically – she says – she's like, Mother's Day, am I right? And the kids today with their iPods and their iPhones and their what-have-yous and the whatnot.
You know that's not Penny Marshall. That was –
that's what she sounded like in the movie.
No, that's from Hairspray on Broadway.
Yeah, Harvey Firestein. Yeah. No, it's Penny Marshall. That's what she sounds like now.
She's like that, right?
A little bit. The movie also has what are now standard in the Gary Marshall movies, where a scene will end in some random odd way, or there will be a random close-up of something or someone, and then no payoff to that. Lots of one-line weird characters who clearly, oh, that's someone Gary Marshall knows, or it's a friend of someone involved in the movie.
Or a relative, doesn't he?
A relative,
like to put,
yeah. A lot of that, yeah. But just sort of random lingering on random people, that kind of thing. You can tell that they used the first take most of the time.
Sure.
Someone, a case where somebody stumbled over a line and they kept it, where she goes, they're talking about the Julia Roberts character, and one of the assistants says, what she means to say is, well, since Forbes listed her, since Forbes listed Miranda as one of the top 50 female whatever, what she says was, when Forbes listed Miranda as the top 50 female whatever whatever, that's where the script supervisor says, hey, hang on, no, it's one of the top 50. Let's do it again. But no, they kept going. Oh, and this other thing. The first scene of the movie, Jennifer Aniston is wearing a towel. She's just gotten out of the shower. It's first thing in the morning.
And she's probably cold, that poor thing.
Just wearing a towel around the house. Her ex-husband is stopped by. Her two sons are there. Her two sons' friends are there.
Okay.
And never mind how odd and implausible that is for this character, especially, to be comfortable with that. Whatever, she's wearing a towel. Later in the movie, she stops by the ex-husband's house, and his new hot young husband is wearing something scanty. She's dressed, but it's revealing.
You said husband. His new...
Oh, wife. Sorry. Sorry. Her ex-husband and his new wife. She's dressed scantily. And after she's gone, Jennifer Aniston says something like, hey, you know, have your hot new wife put on some clothes with the kids and their friends around. And you think, oh, we're coming up to, he's going to call her out on, hey, what about the other morning in your towel? No, doesn't mention it. The movie sets up very clearly, deliberately sets up a parallel thing and then doesn't pay it off, which I assume that that's just a deleted line or there are outtakes over the closing credits. I assume just to prove that there were some. Just to prove that there were things that they filmed.
There was the occasional second take.
That was not suitable for the film proper.
Now, I know that you haven't followed the history of Jennifer Aniston's nipples like I have.
I have not.
But were they present? They had decades of coming out during Friends episodes. Like,
well,
most obvious, like, it was almost like, hang on, either she's doing this on purpose or she can't control this and nobody's telling her about it or she's like, it's weird.
There's
or it was just a cold set.
There's one instance where, oh no, that's somebody else. One of the other women gets her shirt wet. Sarah Chalk or Kate Hudson, one of those. Her shirt gets wet and then she's holding her laptop with her parents on Skype, like on it, and she holds it up to her chest. And so you think we're going for a joke there about, oh, you put your parents up to your chest?
Right.
No, don't mention it. Doesn't go anywhere with it. Another time, Jennifer Aniston's shirt gets ripped, and it shows that her bra is visible. But they don't mention the nipples. I honestly don't recall if the nipples were egregiously – they were not egregiously visible, I don't think.
Well, that's the weird thing. It's never mentioned. Her nipples are never talked about in her pieces, but goodness, they're already always there. It's kind of like The Rock. The Rock, The Rock and Jennifer Aniston, I've never thought of any actor's nipples more than those two. Because The Rock's are now, if I remember correctly, The Rock's nipples actually point down now because his like chest
they're
is
weighted
so
down,
chiseled.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway. I give it it's a 2 out of 10. Oh wait, I didn't see it. What do you give it?
There's a llama reaction shot. Jennifer Aniston throws a party. Oh, did I mention it's Mother's Day? That's the other thing. It's Mother's Day around all this. It's funny that I haven't mentioned it because in this movie, these people really celebrate the hell out of Mother's Day. Mother's Day is a big deal in this world. Atlanta. Movie set in Atlanta, not a single black person in it.
Aww.
They even use phrases like this time of year. You know, the Mother's Day season.
The Mother's Day, yeah.
And it's the week of Mother's Day, so it's like Thursday, Friday, and people talk about, Happy Mother's Day, what are you doing for Mother's Day? Get ready for Mother's Day. Instead of like in real life, where you wake up Sunday morning and it's like, oh, crap, it's Mother's Day. So kudos to these people for all making Mother's Day like their central holiday of everything they do all year long. And I give it an F, straight up F.
Ooh. Oh, that doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't. And it's really only...
Wow.
It's long and irritating. It somehow feels like it's 4 hours long, yet it also feels like they shot it all on a weekend at Gary Marshall's house or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the movie gets lazy and sloppy and clearly not putting forth any effort, that always bothers me even more than the movie just being bad. So, yeah. F, as in F-U. And now let's move on to question of the week.
Question of the week.
We asked you your favorite use of diegetic music in a movie. Diegetic meaning actually within the story, as opposed to just music heard on a soundtrack. And we had many fine examples.
Almost too many.
Almost too many. Eric, a different Eric, not me, mentions two. Says two of his all-time favorite films include a prominent scene where an inmate deceptively broadcasts opera music throughout the prison, bringing a sense of beauty and wonder to those who hear it. One of those is Shawshank Redemption. Oh, I guess which somebody else also mentioned.
Yes, yes.
And then Eric also says From Life is Beautiful. And the song, yes, is from Barcarolle by Offenbach, where he's at the opera and he's looking at the woman. Or no, that's right, it's Letter. That's right, he had seen her at the opera. And he was watching her in the opera, and then later he plays that song in the Nazi prison camp. Yeah. Yeah. That's nice. It's nice when you can brighten people's spirits in prison.
It's what you've always said.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Even if it takes opera to do it. I guess desperate times call for desperate measures.
Justin says the opening scene of Guardians of the Galaxy with Star-Lord dancing across an empty alien world in Come and Get Your Love. It is a great start to that journey. And Brandon says the parade scene in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yes.
Matthew Broderick lip syncing Twist and Shout.
I do love that scene.
And Donkashane.
That is one of my favorite movie scenes.
It really is.
The exuberance of the dancing and the music. And yeah.
Oh, it's just like, why wouldn't every movie insert a scene like this?
Right?
It's like how it felt when I was seeing it for the first time.
Magnolia. Patrick says Magnolia when William H. Macy is listening to Dreams when he crashes his car through a window.
Michelle, Don't Stop Me Now by Queen for Shaun of the Dead. When they're fighting with the and it's choreographed fighting with the pool sticks in the bar.
Yes.
It is when that kicks in, you're right. It's amazing. It is.
Pretty good.
The film hops up another level. And it was, if I remember correctly, with Shaun of the Dead, for me, I needed that. Like, the movie was starting to fade for me just a little bit. Like, as in, wow, this is great. And then I was like, oh, okay, this is good. And then that kicks in again, and you're just like, I'm back with you. Thank you. Give me that energy.
A few from Pulp Fiction. Or a few from Tarantino, I mean. There's a Pulp Fiction, The Girl You'll Be a Woman Soon. Someone else mentioned Jackie Brown across 110th Street from the closing credits of that.
But our buddy Noble actually answered and said, get down Saturday night in Ex Machina.
That's right.
Which is, it
That's
is.
The dance scene, right? That's the,
yeah. Like if you only can name like of the last 3 years, like Guardians of the Galaxy and Ex Machina are definitely on top of that list.
And on the other side of that coin, if you can only name one thing about the movie Ex Machina, you're going to mention the dance scene, aren't you? everyone on the internet for the last year.
Everyone. That's true.
That movie might as well have just been that one scene.
Phil Collins in American Psycho. Oh, boy, that's right.
Steven says a classic, of course, Bohemian Rhapsody in Wayne's World. We're all singing along in the car. It is. That is a classic scene. It's been, of course, imitated and repeated and redone too many times. But that original, classic.
Geoffrey names Jerry Maguire when Tom Cruise is in the car and he's so excited and he's got like – he's so pumped up, but he doesn't know the words to the songs, and he keeps like trying to find them and like come in with it. It is a great moment.
You know, I've never seen that movie. You know that. I'm mentioning it again just to see your disappointed face all over again. What's great is you forget. Every time you forget, so each time I tell you, it's like you're hearing it again for the first time that I've never seen that movie.
I
saw like the first 20 minutes once.
When I saw that movie, I was convinced the girl who kind of liked me and was leading me on would totally like me now because we just saw that movie together.
It didn't work?
No. And that lady's my wife. No. Didn't work. But it was just like, to me, I was like, how can you not be so caught up in the romance now? We're going to be together for real now. I can just tell. No, didn't happen.
And Geoffrey also mentions, or this reminds me of a thing that I don't like when movies do this usually, where we hear a song and it sounds like it's non-diegetic. It's just soundtrack music. And then it turns out to be on the radio.
Yes. Or
whatever. I don't like that.
You don't like being teased.
I don't like being teased, no.
Sometimes I do like being teased.
I mean, it's I'm not saying it can never work, but in general, I feel like you've tricked me.
It's almost like there is that middle ground in between an obvious diegetic and an obvious soundtrack.
Right.
And you can find a level where you're like, oh, I wonder if this is actually being heard right now. And that's it. It's just a little adjusting. But you're right. If it's a true, like, oh, this is just going to be on the soundtrack kind of moment, and then you're like, oh, you're right. I agree with you, as I guess what I said. But I didn't think I would. I've been tricked by myself.
Matt mentions the Cantina Band.
Sure.
Star Wars. Someone else mentioned that too, I think.
Steven.
Perfectly good live music played there at the Cantina.
Steven, this... maybe Steven's answer is mine. I keep going back and forth between my two, and I'm going back to just like my classic gut feeling as opposed to, you know, whatever, the history of all the movies I've seen and what one has actually analyzed best. It's just I'm going emotional here.
Fine.
Steven says...
I'd expect nothing else.
Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen in Wayne's World.
That's what I just mentioned it. Like,
I was not listening to you at
all. What were you doing? I just said.
I have no idea.
And I said, it's a classic. It's been repeated. It's been imitated a bunch of times, but that was a classic.
I think you were talking about something else.
No, I was talking about Bohemian Rhapsody in Wayne's World.
Hang on. I'm going to go check the tape.
Steven said it.
Yeah. You were talking about. I just went back and listened. Uh-huh. You were actually talking about
Bohemian Rhapsody from Wayne's World.
Maybe. Anyway, I'm sorry, but yes, I bought this. That was the first I'd known of that song. What was that?
That may have been the first time that I...
Wayne's World was...
92,
okay. That was the first I knew about it, about the soundtrack. I worshipped that soundtrack. Oh!
There we go. Add it to the list.
Add it to the list.
Worship.
Although, hang on. I said I worshipped.
You no longer worship it?
Does it still count? I don't know. If I actually say that I used to worship something, does that count as this?
I think the list will include things that you do or at some point have worshipped.
Yes, I agree. I think that's fair. I'm assuming we've never talked about this on the show, so let's just move on and not explain people.
Just so everyone knows, I'm keeping a list of things that Jeff Bear says he worships.
Wait, do you know how many things are on the list?
Since I started keeping track, 12.
Wow. Interesting. Good to know.
Steve says, in 500 Days of Summer, you make my dreams come true. But that is that's a fantasy sequence. Yeah.
Yep. That's in his head only.
In his head.
Sorry. Zena says, I got you, babe, in Groundhog Day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very good use of that.
Yes.
My mom says, that thing you do in That Thing You Do, when they hear it on the radio. That's a pretty great moment, hearing their song on the radio.
I agree. There's a lot of really good answers, everybody.
What we find is that music plays a big part in our lives, and many filmmakers find a way to incorporate that, like in the movie Sing Street, for example.
You know, diegeticmusic.com would be, like, good. Like, I would click on these, because some people were smart enough to include, or energetic enough to include the YouTube link.
Oh, so we can see the scenes and context.
And it's just I think when I get bored, that would be a good website to lose some time in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. One of my favorites is My Little Buttercup in The Three Amigos.
Oh, God.
Of course.
Oh, man. Now
great
I have...
scene. Great little song. Great moment.
You know what?
Hmm.
I think that has to be mine because in this new criteria I just added... it stands the test of time better than my other one. My other one being You Never Can Tell by Chuck Berry with Vincent Vega and Mia Wallace dancing in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Because I was obsessed with that movie.
You don't think that scene that stands the test of time?
No. For me personally, as in like, I don't think of that and feel joy as much now. But if you mentioned...
My little buttercup.
I see Martin Short's face light up. I start singing the song. It'll be in my head probably for the next couple hours, and I'll never get sick of it being in my head. All of that happens with that because otherwise, never can tell what I've won. But My Little Buttercup. Done.
Another terrific example. I think it was Diana who mentioned this. Was In Your Eyes. From Say Anything, of course, with the boombox. I very much almost used to worship that song. I considered that, I loved that song, and that moment in that movie, that song was almost like, almost sacred. Like, you couldn't even do a parody of it. Like, it was like this holy, blessed song. It is a great song. Like, I haven't cooled off too much on that, but I used to love that song and was appalled when I would stumble across someone who, like, didn't know the song or didn't find it, think it was that great.
And that was just because of your love of kickboxing? Like, that was it?
Kickboxing?
Isn't that what he wants to be? He wants to be a kickboxer.
Is that what he wants to be in that movie? Kickboxer?
Yeah.
It's been too long since I actually saw the movie.
Anyway.
Many good answers. Thank you, one and all.
Good times, everybody.
Forgot to mention, in Mother's Day, Jason Sudeikis does karaoke of the Humpty Dance. And it's kind of funny for a minute. And then he like falls off a balcony and breaks his ankle or something. Something stupid happens to ruin it.
Was he into it?
Yeah, he was into it. He was doing it at the Mother's Day party that Jennifer Aniston, no, that somebody else threw. I don't remember. Speaking of Mother's Day, for next week, next week is the actual Mother's Day, not the movie Mother's Day, but the actual Mother's Day. And so in conjunction with that, Patrick, is that who suggested this? Yes, Patrick suggested this question. What's the worst movie experience you've ever had with your mother? I feel like there is much potential for many good stories here. You can email us your answers at moviebspdx@gmail.com or just post them on the old Facebook. Be on our website, moviebs.com, all that. Yeah?
I'm getting nervous. I'm not even listening to you anymore.
I know you're not. I can tell you're not listening to me. You nervous about the draft?
Yes. My palms are getting sweaty. I just want to do a good job.
Palms are sweaty. Mom's spaghetti. Whew. All right.
We also have a website. It's moviebs.com. You can go there. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. I didn't mention that.
You didn't? Okay, good.
Totally forgot.
All right, good.
So now let's do the draft. You ready for this?
Yes.
For those of you just joining us, this will be our sixth annual Summer Box Office Challenge. It works in this way. Very simple. We're each going to choose 10 movies that are coming out this summer, summer being between May 1st and Labor Day.
Mm-hmm.
And we will add up the opening weekend box office.
Oh, sound effects. I like the sound effects you got.
Oh, you know what? That's the Wambulance. The Wambulance is coming by to pick you up.
Oh, how dare you.
We'll add up the opening weekend, just opening weekend.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that's mm-hmm. it.
If a movie opens on a Wednesday, then the Wednesday and Thursday don't count. It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
But if it does open on a Friday and there's 7 p.m. screenings on Thursday,
those count because there's no way around it.
Right.
That's kind of the norm now, and they don't separate those totals. So we are going to choose our movies now, and we do this draft. We do this draft thing.
It's referred to as a snake draft. Right. And the way that it works is because the first person picking, you feel like you get an edge a little bit because you're mm-hmm. picking first. They get the first choice. The next person gets two picks, and then it just goes back and forth until we're done.
Like that, yeah.
Until we each have 10.
Let's flip a coin. I have an actual coin here to flip.
Oh, that's interesting. Hmm. Because okay. We will flip the coin.
Okay.
I already did a random number generator.
Oh, yeah.
Going from the minimum of one to the maximum of two.
Right.
And I generated the result. I'm just curious because I know what the result is. What would you have said? I was going to give you the option since I clicked the button.
Is heads one and tails two?
You'd say one or two.
I'm going to say heads.
So then say one or two right now.
Well, then I would say one.
You would have been right.
Oh, well, let's see if I'm still right when I toss the coin.
Here's the thing. Hang on.
What?
If you win the coin toss, do you get to choose, or does that mean you are picking first? Or does that mean you're choosing if you pick first?
It means that I get to choose.
Okay.
And I'm going to choose to pick first.
Wait, you didn't win.
I know, but if I do win, I'm going to choose to pick first. That will be my choice. I'm flipping the coin now.
Wait, am I calling it? I'm calling it since you're flipping it.
Okay.
Are you catching it and then flipping it over, or are you letting it hit the table?
And I'm catching it and flipping it over, like you do.
Okay.
So that thing with the random number generator just now, that didn't count, right? Okay.
Because you were excited right. that you had a coin, and I kind of was too.
Toss a coin. All right. Tossing a coin. You call it in the air. Ready?
Tails.
Heads.
All right. I'm comfortable with you picking first, even though I think it's already over.
All right. So,
whatever.
All right. I am picking first. The movie that I choose, Captain America, Civil War.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Going to make all the money.
I know.
And now you get two choices. Isn't that great?
Independence Day 2 and Suicide Squad.
All right. Independence Day, Suicide Squad. I then choose Ghostbusters. You know, they're making a new one with ladies.
When?
This summer sometime.
Crazy talk. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go X-Men Apocalypse.
All right. I next choose Finding Dory.
I choose Jason Bourne, which I had one spot ahead of Finding Dory, so it's everything's fine. I don't care. I'm not upset.
Angry Birds.
Oh, I see what you're doing now.
What? Winning?
Don't you worry about it. I had circles, so I can't look at a list. I didn't make a list. I'm looking at circles because that's how ill-prepared I was for this. So that's why I apologize for skinning my list right now. Not that I want to, but I've already... Oh, boy. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows. At least I have Jason Bourne on my list. Like, that's going to be a quality blockbuster, so I'll feel good about rooting for it.
I'm going to say Star Trek Beyond.
So this one I had one spot ahead of Star Trek Beyond, but I didn't feel, The Conjuring 2. I'm going to go The Conjuring Part 2.
I think The Conjuring was one of the ones that surprised us a few years ago. Neither of us chose it, and it wound up being one of the big.
The next summer, I chose every odd thing, hoping to score it, and I just got crushed.
Now I say... I'm going to say the BFG, Spielberg movie.
I was really hoping to get that one.
Well, you didn't.
I am going to go with that stupid Ice Age movie.
I can't believe there's another one.
Ice Age Collision Course.
How many even is this? Like eight?
I have no clue. I have no idea.
The Secret Life of Pets.
Central Intelligence.
I have a history of overlooking the animated films. So this year I'm bulking up on them.
You have three of them, right?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Neighbors 2. Sorority Rising.
Oh, boy. I don't know why. Alice Through the Looking Glass. That's a movie that could just tank.
Yeah, you'd think so. The first one made $1 billion.
A billion?
Yeah, a lot of people saw and liked that movie. I'm afraid I'm going to regret it, but I'm going to say Warcraft.
Oh, when does that come out?
I don't know.
I forgot to put, I don't have a circle on it.
No, yeah, June 10th. Yeah.
June 10th.
All right, your turn.
All right. Man, that weekend is nuts. I'm going to stay away from that weekend and say Pete's Dragon.
All right, so now you've got 10. My final one, I'm going to choose Me Before You, which I knew would make you make that face. This is every year there's one of those movies that's based on a young adult novel. Remember The Fault in Our Stars one time?
Yes.
I feel like this is that one this year.
You do love finding that movie.
Mm-hmm. It's about like a guy and a girl, and one of them's in a wheelchair or something. And they fall in love.
Box office gold.
Yeah.
I've already had
two female acquaintances ask if they could go to that screening with me.
Oh, okay. So, there you go. So you did research.
I did a little bit of research, yeah.
put them down just so we're curious about them. Now You See Me Part 2 and Ben-Hur. were my like, maybe do I have to take
Ben-Hur
those?
Ben-Hur would also be on the list. The Legend of Tarzan, The Purge, right. Election Year,
yep.
And Sausage Party were all the other potential big hits, I think. But yeah. So there we go. Those are 10 our 10 choices. It begins next week. Right out of the gate, we'll have Captain America.
And not only that, you have... Oh, man.
Do I have the first few?
You have the first three. Oh, but then I have the next four.
All right.
So there you go.
Good. I like a good horse race. I mean, not in real life, but like a metaphorical horse race.
Actually, you know what? So, the big difference here is I have the last three movies. So you will have a lead, and then we'll see if I can
You'll
chip
have
away
the last.
At it.
Yeah, yeah.
But all the way through June, it's going to be a back and forth until the end of June, so that's nice.
Good, good. Well, all right. I think we have a fine contest there. We have some ideas for the stakes of the bet, some things that we have discussed. We'll finalize those in the coming days.
But we'll also take your suggestions.
Yes,
we've done them before.
If you have any.
So two ideas that we have is...
I don't think we should talk about the ideas we have.
We don't have any ideas yet.
Because of what if we decide we don't want to do them? Then we got to deal with... Oh, you should have done that thing you said.
Oh, that is what our listeners sound like. Good point. Oh, they're the worst.
So there we go. That's the end of the show.
We did it.
We had a big show today. Sing Street's so good, you should go see Sing Street if it's playing where you are.
If we didn't say it, it makes you happy.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if you like to be happy, then you'll see that movie, and then you'll be happy, is what I'm trying to say.
It's happy. And also kind of melancholy. It's like that wistful kind of happiness, kind of nostalgia a little bit,
that's
too.
Right.
And yeah. Well, she even says in the movie, the girl says, you know, your problem is you don't know how to be happy sad. And that's what love is, happy sad. Or you don't know how to be happy while you're sad or something. Anyway.
You know, who knows? It's a movie. Who cares?
And then Mother's Day is terrible. What's the other one? Oh, Keanu. I think I liked it better than you, but it's not great.
I think it'll be one of those movies that 4 years from now we'll rewatch and I'll try to tell you why everything's not funny. Like, I won't give it a chance. That's my hunch.
That's fair. And question of the week, tell us the worst movie experience you've ever had with your mother. And we'll talk about your mom's next week. Next week, mom show. You know, it's that time of the year. It's that season of the year where we talk about moms. So for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I'm Jeff Bear.
Thank you for listening, and good day.
I said good day.